a very informative, very, very exciting and interesting, and very disciplined, almost exactly 10 minutes long. And our next speaker is Makola Maya Kimball, who wants to be introduced, he tells me, as a poet and as an ex-student. He says he'll explain why that's important. He's been involved in a number of campaigns around about African issues, but I'll let Makola introduce himself.
Thank you. Sorry, just a correction. My name is Makola Mayambika.
Oh, sorry, that's fine.
It's actually Mayambika, but my dad changed it when we came here in this country. just side note there. I wanted to touch upon particular countries. I wanted to touch upon South Africa, which the speaker has talked about. I think he's been very modest when he talked about the struggles of working class people in Africa. But I also want to go back to that period before Africa was colonized, because it's right to say that many people who took part in struggles, military struggles against colonialism, will now be, I suppose, twisting in their graves to know that many young people my age have a political amnesia. It's very much similar to America as well with black people, in that one way or another, our history has been either forgotten or simply just not passed on from one century to another. And there's obviously the whole kind of reason for it. If you don't know your own history, it's very, you know, it's easy for someone like Jacques Chirac to go to Africa and say he wants to see democracy in Africa. It's very easy for Tony Blair to say, you know, we are going to rescue Africa, if we don't know the history of the history that we have come from. So I guess I want to do justice to some of those struggles that took place in Africa, particularly before independence, particularly before colonization, and indeed during colonization, and of course after colonization, because we are seeing a new wave of struggles that's been waged in Africa today. As I speak, I think it was last week, I didn't get a chance to, but last Saturday there was a protest outside Ugandan embassy. There's now a new movement again in Uganda to call for democracy against Museveni, the president, who's now wants to stand for another term. He's trying to bribe the entire parliamentary candidates to say, well, you know, if you let me stay for another term, for another 4 years, I'm going to give you guys pay rise and stuff. So I want to start off really by looking at South Africa and come back on South Africa, because I think South Africa is very important to understand, to look at actually some of the struggles that took place. I think that's you're very modest. I mean, just looking through the history of South Africa, I found some horrific or astonishing rather figures. You had a situation where when you had a rise of working class struggles and a rise of the ICO, the Commercial Workers Union, we also saw that these working class struggles, we began to be articulated into political struggles. So you saw the birth of the Communist South African Communist Party. You saw the birth of the African National Congress, as well as other organizations such as the APO. You had a situation in South Africa where something like between 1939 in 1945, you had something like 300 strikes, which, if my math serves me correct, it works out something like 50 strikes per every year in that country. A situation where, for us to understand the impact of such things, for us to understand the symbolic of it, you have to remember that South Africa, you know, was obviously under apartheid at that time. There was, you know, repression and brutality was brought upon African people. So we have to understand that when we talk about these struggles, they happened at a time when it was very hard to organize. You know, as you said, being a member of a trade union was illegal, you could get fired. It came at a time when Africans were being forced, in South Africa, being forced to pay taxation, they were forced into exploitation in the mines or what have you. As you said, you know, they weren't even allowed to walk on the road, or they weren't allowed to walk on the pavement. So for them to organize in such a way is very much an achievement in itself. And these strikes between 1939 to 1945 involved something like 58,000 black workers and 60,000 white workers. And I said they gave birth to new organizations that took these struggles and began to interpret it into a political demand. So you had in the 1950s, the ANC organized a general strike in June the 26th, which is now today South Africa's Freedom Day. And they launched what was called the Freedom Charter. Many ANC activists, when I was in South Africa, were very actually angry about what's happening in South Africa now. They said, you know, the ANC is now a shadow of what it used to be. The Freedom Charter has been, you know, has been abandoned, and they were quite disappointed at the ANC, and rightly so. But in the 50s, the ANC launched this campaign. They called for a general strike against unlawful laws, and they called for a distribution of wealth in the Freedom Charter. And so that day, the 26th of June, is now South Africa's Freedom Day. as well as that, they were forced. A lot of the ANC members were either arrested, as you know. The youth wing, the militant youth wing leaders, particularly Nelson Mandela and others, were arrested for 27 years, as we know. And in fact, the ANC and the South African Communist Party, as well as other organisations, were forced underground and were forced to launch to wage an armed struggle against the apartheid regime. But I also want to look at another country, Sudan, where we see the conflict happening in Darfur. But many people don't know that actually Sudan had a fantastic history of resistance. Yeah, the most organized and the biggest communist party throughout that region, in fact, throughout the region of Africa and the Arab world. At its peak, the membership of the Communist Party was something like 10,000 members, and it organized workers who had been forced into the railways and the ports that were built during colonialism. And in fact, in 1964, there was a military regime that was overthrown, and the Communist Party mobilized people to overthrow the military regime and introduce a new one. But what happened is throughout the years, the Communist Party were either again forced into underground or they were absorbed into the party, into the government, when the government formed the Socialist Sudanese People's Union. They were absorbed into the regime, and mistakenly they agreed to take part in the regime. To their demise, once it suited the government, and no longer to use them, they began to locking them up and made them illegal. And we also saw that the period of when the IMF began to Jesus. I've only got 5 minutes, and I wanted to take you through different countries. I wanted to talk about the UPC, which was formed in 1948, which was in Cameroon, which stands for People's Union, which was formed by five or six different intellectuals who got together and decided that they were going to form a union of People's Cameroon and unite Cameroon and demand for independence for the Cameroon people. And they organized the organized demonstration, which was harshly suppressed by both not just the British but also the French, because Cameroon was split into two sides. I wanted to talk more about actually where I'm from myself, which is DR Congo, but I believe the speaker here is from DR Congo. Maybe he might want to talk about that. But actually, because I've only got 5 minutes, I wanted to just talk about resistance today. And how people like myself are continuing that resistance. In DR Congo, there's a huge religion called Kimbangis, which was another form of way in which Africans resisted through religion and through music. And I remember watching a documentary which was showing the Zimbabwean fighters. They were split into two. There was the ZANU-PF, the Zimbabwean African Union, and the ZAPU, the Zimbabwean African People's Union, which both organized armed struggle against the white settler regime in Zimbabwe. And they were talking about how Bob Marley music, they would listen to Bob Marley music and they would psych themselves up and they would go into battle to fight against the settler regime. And such music inspired them. In fact, Bob Marley music was banned in South Africa. That situation where certain words, they'll play the music, they'll allow the music to be played, but certain words will be edited out. So when you listen to certain words like revolution or something, you couldn't actually hear it because they were worried about the effect they would have on African people. I wanted to talk about Zambia, which had a fantastic history of resistance during colonialism, but also actually after colonialism, when Kunda, the head of the ruling party, imposed one party state and began to impose a harsh measurement or IMF structural adjustment program, and we saw similar thing happen in Zimbabwe. Happening in Zimbabwe, where the trade union got together with civil society and others to form a coalition. In Zambia, it was called the multi-party movement for multi-party democracy. In Zimbabwe, we had the MDC. So we see the links there continue the same way in which African people organized under colonialism, where it was working class struggle, which was then interpreting to demand for independence. The same way we see continuing today. But as I said, I want to end on a poem. And this poem I want to end on is called What to Buy. And as I said, I'm an ex-student. I was involved in the Black Student Campaign. And while I went to the NUS Black Student Campaign, I went to the NUS conference, and I met this woman, and we were debating about something I can't remember now, but it was really a fierce debate. We both just fell in love with each other's arguments and how both of us were very passionate about Africa and about politics and stuff. And so, we got together. We started dating. And so I wrote a poem for her because I wanted to buy her something. It was Christmas, and I didn't have much money. I wanted to buy her something, and I was studying in Manchester once again. And Manchester is home to the 5th Pan-African Congress that was held in 1945, where you had the likes of Jomo Kenyatta, the likes of Kwame Nkrumah. These became the first leaders of Africa, which, you know, 5 or 6 years afterward, they went back to Africa and organized workers and people of Africa to demand independence. So I felt privileged. I was studying in a country, in an area, in a town which had this history. So I see myself very much as an African who's continuing that tradition of organizing black people and African in this country, educating about Africa as well as getting them involved in politics. So anyway, so I met this woman in a Black Student Conference. We were dating, and it was Christmas, and I wanted to get something. And so I wrote this poem. It's called What to Buy, and I want to end on this poem. And it goes something like this. I'll stand up. What to buy, what to buy, a thought circulating in my mind. What to buy, what to buy, a gift that would define my truest expression. As embark on a journey for perfect gift that reflect my deepest emotions. What to buy, all these choices I endeavor. Like, Should I buy her a fur coat, or one that's leather? I could have it custom made with glitter filled with feather. But in the end, I'll only be contributing to extinction of rare species forever. What about a diamond ring that will sparkle for all the friends to marvel at the beauty? Lest for one sec forget the cruelty of these companies. Financing civil war for cheaper diamond so they can get wealthy. A gold ring instead? 4 million Africans dead, no, what's more to be said? I could buy you a secondhand car for you to choke Mother Nature. Her perfume smelling of illegal child labor. Her mobile phone with a camera for your sweetness to capture and your health to endanger as it increases your chances of developing cancer. Now how about some chocolate and flowers, I hear you ask? But take me not for cheapskate, but still I hear some of you laugh. But don't you know, the cocoa is grown and fertilized by the sweat and blood of the slaves on plantation, of children sold from poorer to richer African nations. But I have before you a gift that's organic in every sense of the word, original and poetic. Now I know some of you have guessed it. Sweet and cherry, Makola Mambika, and that's how she likes it. Thank you.